foreman versus a union. Mr. Hellenhaus.
May it please the court, James Hellenhaus for appellant. We're appealing the grant of summary judgment. This case presents the issue of whether the duty to arbitrate under an expired collective bargaining agreement extends forever. Local 150.
Well, how long does it extend in your view?
It extends for a reasonable time, absent language in the contract to the contrary, setting a definite deadline for that time period. And in the absence of...
Wouldn't it make life simpler if we said, well, that's a, basically, there's no time limit, but a company can, or a union, whoever's asked, the defendant can always ask the arbitrator to dismiss the case because of laches, you know, unreasonable delay.
Well, there are two issues there. First, there's a substantive issue of the duty to arbitrate, and the duty to arbitrate expires at some point. The duty to arbitrate does not extend beyond some point after the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement. Now,
so are you saying, I mean, arbitration, of course, comes from contract.
Correct.
And so, and contracts, other contracts, contracts to provide services, contracts to sell goods, can have a termination date. So arbitration contracts can too. And you're saying that even if it's not the minute after the CBA expires, there's a termination date after which there's no longer an agreement to arbitrate?
Yes, I believe that determination date has to be, in the first instance, you have to look at the contract to determine whether the parties intended to for there to be a determination date for the duty to arbitrate. And in this case, the parties provided in the grievance procedures that arbitration must be performed within 45 working days of the alleged occurrence. So that, in the first instance, would be the cutoff for the arbitration date. Otherwise, I think you could also imply...
What about violations, then, that occurred less than 45 days before the expiration of the contract?
Violations that occur... Oh, if as long as the demand for arbitration was made within 45 days of the occurrence, it would still be arbitrable, notwithstanding that the contract had expired.
So you're changing your position, because first you said the contract or the duty to arbitrate expires a reasonable time after the end of the contract. Now, in response to Judge Evans, you're saying 45 days.
Absent language, I believe I said absent language in the contract to the contrary, and I think that's where you first...
Well, there is no language to the contrary in this contract, is there?
Well, no, there's not.
So your position is the duty to arbitrate expired 45 days after the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement?
Yes.
Not a reasonable time. 45 days.
Yes.
That's your position.
If that is drew, is construed as a substantive
well, wait
duty
a second.
To arbitrate...
Well, don't hedge. Is that your position or not that position?
Yes.
All right. 45 days.
Yes.
Let me ask you a procedural question. This case wound up getting decided on summary judgment against you after you moved for summary judgment. And although that's unusual, if there really are no disputed facts on the record, we have some cases that have said a district court can do that. How, if at all, were you prejudiced? I thought you were presenting this as a case in which there were no disputed issues of fact. What would you have shown the district court if it had given you an opportunity to demonstrate that there were some facts that needed to be resolved?
Well, the district court made findings of fact that weren't supported by either party. For example, the district court concluded that the collective bargaining agreement had expired beyond December of 1999. At the district court level, the only evidence the district court had in front of it was the affidavit submitted on behalf of Corman that stated that the contract expired in December of 1999. Local 150 did not present any evidence on that issue, and they never took the position in any of their beliefs briefs down below that the contract expired beyond that date. And indeed,
didn't they concede that it did expire in December of 99?
Indeed, they did down below, and it was only on this appeal and after the district court made the erroneous conclusion that it was extended beyond December 1999 that they took the position also that the contract had extended.
That fact just fell outside whatever statement of undisputed facts you had submitted in support of your alternative, I guess, motion for summary judgment or whatever you wanted to call it. You'd moved for preliminary injunction, then you said, well, and if you don't want to do that, grant a summary judgment, right?
Yes, and we submitted evidence that the contract had expired on December 1999, and that was never disputed by Local 150.
Okay. Any other evidence that you feel that you were deprived of the opportunity to submit? What about all the stuff about this audit?
Yeah, the audit was not made on behalf of Local 150. I also believe that we weren't given an opportunity to present evidence that a demand for arbitration should have been measured from the time that the employees were paid.
Isn't that a legal argument?
Well, it is also a factual argument in terms of when they were paid, when notice of what they were paid was given to them. But in getting back to the audit was not performed on behalf of Local 150. The audit was also not performed for the purposes of determining whether there was a wage underpayment. In any event, Local 150 never explained, because they never took the position that the audit was performed for those purposes, never explained why, if indeed it was done on their behalf, why in June or July, excuse me, of 2000, when the pension fund initiated its lawsuit for its audit, that at that point it couldn't initiate a grievance procedure or demand arbitration. Still, they waited 14 months beyond the initial process of beginning that audit.
But you knew that somebody was auditing you, presumably.
Of course.
Sure. So weren't you more or less on notice that there was some interest on the union's part in these wages?
Well, whether we were on notice, perhaps we were on notice, but I think the Supreme Court, I believe it was the Supreme Court case, not Williams, but there is a case we cited in our brief, that said we cannot presume that what the funds were doing, that knowledge can be attributable to the union. And really, the key issue is whether it was reasonable for them to delay, not whether it was reasonable for us to know whether they were reasonable in their delay. Thank you.
Well, wait a second. You told me that the duty to arbitrate expired 45 days after the collective bargaining agreement expired, but that's not the position in your brief.
Well, the duty to arbitrate expires under this particular contract within 45 days after the alleged occurrence. The latest that could have been, and we're taking that position, if for some reason there is an excuse in delay that would excuse that 45 days, the demand nevertheless has to be made within a reasonable time.
Why doesn't the arbitrator decide what's a reasonable time?
Because I think the Supreme Court made clear in Litton that the duty to arbitrate, the arbitrability question, is a question for the court to determine. And even if the court has to reach the merits of the grievance, the court still must address whether there is a duty to arbitrate.
But the simplest way to deal with the case, I think, is to say this duty to arbitrate has no termination date and therefore doesn't terminate, although, of course, if the union delays unreasonably, then the arbitrator will say, well, you know, you're barred by laches.
Well, I believe still there is the duty to arbitrate has to expire at some
otherwise
point. There has to be some
otherwise,
point.
If we held that this was arbitrable because it was done within a reasonable time or whatever we said, you'd still argue to the arbitrator that it was too late, that it was you were prejudiced and so on, that he shouldn't hear the case.
Well, we shouldn't have to go through the arbitration in the first place because we did not agree to arbitrate the dispute at this point.
But you're basically asking for two bites at the apple because you'll make the same argument to the arbitrator that you make to us.
No, because we'll never get to arbitration if we're successful here.
Pardon?
We will never get to arbitration.
No, if you lose.
No, the argument, we are not making an argument that there was not compliance with the specific procedures, grievance procedures in the agreement. We are arguing simply here that the time...
Yes, but if we hold that the duty to arbitrate didn't expire, you will still argue to the arbitrator that the union waited too long.
I think we may be barred from making that argument in arbitration if you hold that.
Barred by what?
Well, I see that my time has expired. I think we could, but if I could finish my point,
sure.
I think we can still make the argument that there was noncompliance under the specific grievance procedures in the contract, but I did not think we could make the general argument at that point that they waited too long to make the demand for arbitration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Mr. Hellhouse. Mr. Sigmund?
May it please the court, my name is Louis E. Sigmund, and I represent the defendant FLE, International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. In this case, the real issue is that the underlying grievances, which are the failure of the company to pay wages to certain employees, in the amount specified in the collective bargaining agreement, occurred during the period that that agreement was in effect.
Mr. Sigmund, I have a real problem with the way this case reached us procedurally, because Judge Castillo was very unclear about what he was doing. For example, he seems to say he's giving a Rule 12C judgment on the pleadings, but he, of course, can't be doing that because you can't do Rule 12C until the pleadings are closed, and the pleadings aren't closed until there's at least an answer, which there never was here. So that's not what he's doing. He may be giving him the benefit of the doubt, which is doing something he said he wasn't, which was summary judgment, that if there are issues of material fact that were not developed because of a sudden conversion to summary judgment, then it could be that they would have an influence on this case, such as when did the collective bargaining agreement expire. I should think the union, for example, if it was really extended in the way that Judge Castillo seemed to have thought it was, might have a great interest in more wages, you know, if it went on for all the way up until the time the Gary facility closed down. If it really terminated in December of 1999, that's a different thing. The time at which you received notice might be relevant to some of these issues. It's a very procedurally unsatisfactory background for these questions about arbitration to come up in.
Well, let me respond to that in just a couple of respects. First, in our response, we attached certain documents which were never objected to and on which the court relied in essentially, as you said, ruling on summary judgment. In fact,
even though he plainly says here in his order, therefore the court enters a judgment on the pleadings pursuant to Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 12C. I'm reading here.
Yes. I know that he did say that.
Which
However,
would have required him to take the facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving, to the presumptively non-moving party, Corman, right? But he didn't do that.
Well, I think he did do that.
Well, no, he resolved some issues, like what the wage audit was about and when the CBA expired, in your favor.
Well, I think because his primary address was whether there was a duty to arbitrate, and he, in that sense, left it to the arbitrator to determine what the scope of the union's claim was.
Did you file a motion to arbitrate? A motion to compel arbitration?
No, they filed the suit before we filed it.
Well, you could file a motion in this suit to compel arbitration.
No, we didn't because...
You could have, I said.
Well, it happened so fast that the first thing that we got was the motion for the TRO.
The problem is this is it's a complex issue because on the one hand, if there's an agreement to arbitrate, presumptions are drawn in favor of that agreement, and there are certain issues which are clearly for the arbitrator. On the other hand, the Supreme Court has told us in First Options against Kaplan that the preliminary question, whether there is agreement or whether there continues to be agreement, is a matter for the court, and this court has decided cases like that as well. So there's a threshold issue about whether the agreement to arbitrate continues. Judge Posner suggested one way that might be resolved, which is to say once an agreement, always an agreement. There may be other ways. This was never explored at the district court in any detail at all.
Well,
because it all happened at the wink of an eye.
Well, that part is essentially true. It happened, the suit was filed, the motion was filed, and we had a period of time to respond. The judge set a quick ruling date and he issued his ruling. However, let me go back first to the issue of the 12C matter. Under Rule 12C, the court can, in effect, convert it to a motion for summary judgment.
If he was doing anything, he was converting a 12B. You cannot have a 12C without an answer.
I think you're right, but I'm saying is
But the only conversion he did was to convert the motion for preliminary injunction into a motion for summary judgment by Corman.
Well, I think...
And then he converted it into a motion by the union.
For a declaratory
judgment. Without telling anybody.
Well, I agree with that. I think he said, I have reviewed the facts which Corman stated in its reply brief after having had the opportunity to review our memorandum and all of the documents which we filed in response to the motion for TRO. And they said, no disagreement. And they urged the court to basically decide the issues on the facts in front of Judge Castillo.
But it does happen a lot that people will file a motion for summary judgment and they'll say, you know, the undisputed facts show that we win, and if the judge finds that there are disputed facts, they're not conceding that the other side wins. They're just saying that there should be more proceedings, more discovery, more exploration of the facts.
Well, but I believe Judge Castillo...
Otherwise, there would never be any trials. There would just be motions for summary judgment. If they were granted, side A would win. If they were denied, side B would win.
Well, I think that...
That would streamline things.
Well, I think where you have that situation is where the district court judge, in fact, when he denies summary judgment, he's saying that there are some disputed facts. And Judge Castillo didn't say that here, and the plaintiff, the appellant, didn't argue that in front of the district court. It said there aren't any disputed facts, and essentially agreed that everything that we furnished to the court was correct, and that they weren't disputing what was in those particular documents.
This is not an unusual occurrence, is it? Well, one side comes in and says the facts are A, B, C, we win, and the judge says, no, the facts are A, B, C, you're right on that, but you lose.
Yeah, I think that's essentially what Judge Castillo said is,
sure.
You know, I've looked at the issue presented to me, and the party making the motion says, I agree, there's no disputed facts, I don't dispute anything that's been put in front of the court by the other party, rule in my favor. And the judge comes back and says, okay, there are no disputed facts, I'm ruling in the other party.
Are you saying that in its reply brief in the district court, Corman stated that there were no disputed facts?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And it urged the court to enter summary judgment.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hellenhaus, how much time do we have? Well, we'll give you a minute. Maybe you could answer the question, what you said in your district court reply brief, which I haven't seen at any event.
Your Honor, we did dispute their characterization of the facts. The fact remains that Local 150 did not present any evidence down below. The district court factual findings were not based on anything
on
the record.
Well, you said you disputed their characterization. Did you the legal significance of the facts? Did you dispute the facts themselves?
The material facts were not in dispute. The facts that the court relied upon in its decision...
Well, if the facts aren't in dispute, what's the purpose of having further proceedings?
Because the court had absolutely... The position that the district court took and the facts that the district court found as being undisputed facts weren't advocated by either side.
So you're saying that you said A, B, and C are not disputed. The other side said A, B, and C are also not disputed, but the district court found D, E, and F?
Exactly.
Okay, so in your view, the district court added new facts beyond those which everybody had agreed were represented state of the play.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel.